this morning. Not enough people to fill up. But you guys came out on a Sunday morning, a wet Sunday morning. I appreciate you doing that today. It's good to see you. For those mothers that are here, we certainly want to welcome you and say happy Mother's Day. It's a special day throughout the country. I'm hoping that this is probably one of the most treasured days of the year for mothers, and we certainly want to share that with you this morning, and thank you for coming out. As we continue teaching about a subject called life after death, we've been on this for about 4 weeks or so. And the beauty of this is that we've all, I guess everyone, as we've learned early on, everyone seems to have an idea that there is a life after death. Very few people will say that there is nothing. I have been around men and who say that when you're dead, it's over, it's it, and your time is gone, and that's all there is to it. And it's and they have rested in that, but I consider that to be a miserable idea, because if this is all we have is what's on this earth and in our short time on it, then it certainly we are miserable people. But we believe fully in an afterlife. We believe fully that the Lord has prepared a place for those who follow Him, who believe in Him, who trust in Him. Jesus, His Son, has told us that He's going to go away and prepare a place for us, that in His Father's house are many mansions for us. And that requires an afterlife. That requires an eternity that He provided on the cross when He not only gave His life, but when He rose again. That allows us to have the same eternal life, and we're just so thankful for that. And as we continue this morning, we're doing part two of the parables of Jesus. You know, last week we went over three different parables, I believe, in the book of Luke that Jesus spoke with reference to the afterlife. And as I studied this week, I came to the conclusion that Jesus speaks a whole lot more about the afterlife than I ever thought. Most of His parables were dealing with a reward system or a punishment or an afterlife. And three that we're going to talk about today out of the book of Matthew are declaring that there is something that's going to take place that provides an afterlife for every person. Whether it's eternity with Christ or whether it's punishment. So He speaks a whole lot more about an afterlife than I ever really contemplated or thought. So we're going to talk about the three parables that we're all familiar with today and see if we can understand what He may have been saying. Let's go to the Lord in prayer this morning. Thanksgiving as always. Lord, You have blessed us. You have blessed us here on this time, our time on this earth, God. You have provided for us. You continue to protect, provide, and give us strength and stability, Lord. You have provided a way for eternal salvation. You have provided an eternal home for us, Lord, that after this life is over, we can spend eternity with You, and we can never, never give You enough thanks for all that You have provided and done for us in that manner. Lord, we join our voices this morning on behalf of those that are among us that are sick and those who can't be here that are sick and unable to attend, those that are facing situations that they need a touch physically from You, Lord. We just ask, God, and our voices lifted up to You on their behalf, Lord, that You would reach down upon them in their time of need and give them deliverance, give them peace and comfort, and knowing that You have provided healing for all of them, Lord, if they would receive and accept it, Lord, and we just thank You for that. I thank You for this specific day that we can reflect upon motherhood and what You have provided in the family unit, God, and we just pray that all the mothers that are here, as well as those who may not can be here, Lord, may this be a blessed day that not only do we give thanks for our mothers, but we also give thanks for the family unit that You've created. We thank You for it, Lord, and we just pray, God, that throughout this day, this morning, through this lesson and through the morning service, that Your name would be lifted up and praised, and in return You would pour out Your blessings upon those that are here this morning. We ask these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Jesus' parables about the afterlife. Part two, what we're going to do is we're going to take the book of Matthew. Matthew, remember, we've talked about him before. Matthew primarily wrote his gospel hoping that the Jewish people would take notice of what he was saying about Jesus being the Christ, because that's why Matthew started his gospel, given the genealogical account of how Jesus came from the line of David which was a prophetic thing that the Messiah had to be. And he's trying to convince all these religious Jews that, hey, Jesus, whom you cried out to crucify, he was the Messiah. He is the ever-living Lord, and he is the one that we should follow. So his gospel is primarily directed toward the Jewish people at that time, but we glean as much out of it, being Gentiles, as anyone. But in this particular book, Matthew gives a lot of parables. And as we go through the three that that they've chosen for us today, I'm going to try to set the stage for each of them, letting you know who he's speaking about and to and all of that, because that part of it's important. Out of the 13th chapter of Matthew, this is where Jesus has been teaching. He goes a lot of times to the synagogue and can teach people, religious people there. But as he's out and about in the neighborhoods and he is teaching, he's performing miracles, he's healing the lame and the blind and all of these, performing all these miracles, he is gathering multitudes of people that are following him. Everywhere he goes now, multitudes follow him, hoping to either see a miracle, experience a miracle, or learn about this young man's teaching about the kingdom of heaven. Because one thing we know is that in the book of Matthew, he speaks of the kingdom of heaven quite often. 10 times, actually, in the book of Matthew, will Jesus make mention of this. And that sparks an interest with anyone who is searching, anyone who is frustrated with their life or knows that there's something else besides what I'm going through or living in right now. And when he starts teaching about the kingdom of heaven, he's not teaching primarily of just, hey, let's get as much out of this life on earth as we can, and I'm going to tell you how. He's talking about a future life, an afterlife, and something that is piquing the interest of people. So, and when we get to the chapter 13, he has made his way down to the seashore, and the throngs of people have gathered around him so much that he, to get away from them, if they would surround him, if he didn't, he went to the seashore and got into a boat. And this was a common thing for him. He would get into a boat. He could get elevated, the acoustics bouncing off the sea or whatever. They tell me around the Sea of Galilee, the acoustics are incredible. He would get in a boat and he would be able to talk, and his voice would reverberate and the multitudes could hear him. And he began talking about the kingdom of heaven. And the first part of chapter 13, he talks about the familiar parable of the sower, where the sower is the farmer throwing seed out. Some of it falls by the wayside. Some of it falls on stony ground. Some of it falls among the thorns. And then there's some of it, a fourth of it, falls upon good ground. And Jesus is referring to, this is the gospel being spread amongst the people. Some will be on the wayside where the birds will come and eat it, or the people will just stamp on it. It won't even penetrate their minds or their hearts. The ones that fall on the stony ground, it can't get any root. They receive it really quickly, but then the enemy comes and tells them, oh, you can't believe this, or persecutions will drive them away. There's no root there. And so they fall away. And then the thorns, they get caught up in they receive the gospel with glad tidings, but then they get caught up in the cares of life and the pleasures of life. And that takes the place of what the gospel message is. So they walk away. But there is a group that receives it well, gets in the good soil, has good roots, stays in there through persecution, turns away from sinful living. That is the parable that Jesus is referring to right before he gets into chapter 20 or verse 24, which is where we are now, because he's going to be talking about an afterlife and a separation point. As a matter of fact, all three of these parables are going to be talking about a separation. In the end, the last day, there will be a separation. And here's what we find out. And I will most likely read some that you don't have for the sake of space. They have not included a lot of what I wanted them to include, so I'll probably read more than you have. And it says, another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men were asleep, his enemy came and sowed tares. That's a type of weed. Sowed tares among the wheat, and went his way. So in the cover of night, when everyone was asleep, an enemy came to a man who had planted wheat. His goal was to survive off of his harvest of the wheat. He had an enemy that came under the cover of darkness and planted what they call tares, which is a type of weed, and he planted it in amongst the wheat unknowingly and then went on his way, and no one knew about this. So I want to pick up on verse 26, and it says, but when the blade was sprung up, when the wheat and the weed sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. In other words, the weed that was the weed or the tares that were planted, they grew up with the wheat, the same measurement, the same type of growth. And the thing about this particular ambush or whatever from this enemy is the tare that they planted is something that in biblical days they called a darnel. And it was a type of, almost a poisonous plant that would grow, and it looked identical to wheat until it got to full maturity. So if you planted wheat and your enemy planted darnel and they would grow up side by side, the first part of it looked exactly the same. You couldn't tell one from the other. And that's important to know. I mean, usually if you go to your garden and you see a weed right off, you know the weeds don't look like the thing that you planted, so you know you got to pluck that out before the roots get entangled with each other. But in this case, darnel comes up looking just like wheat. So it's only when, the Bible says, only when the fruit came out or the ear or the ear of wheat developed did his servants say, oh my word, look at here, someone has sabotaged us. Because we can see the wheat, but they've got darnel, they've got tares right beside of it. But by now, it has taken time for them to get that high to where the actual ear of wheat is exposed, that the root ball of all of them are entangled so much that it's growing together in the roots. So what happens here? The servants know that something's got to be done. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, sir, didst thou not sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? Where do these tares come from? And he said unto them, an enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, wilt thou that we go and gather them up? You want us to go out here and get as many of these tares up? We'll rip them out. We know what that's going to do. The roots are entangled. But we got to get rid of these tares. And he said, no, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. You take out the good while ripping out the bad. Don't do it. Let both grow together until the harvest. Let's let them grow side by side all the way until we harvest the whole thing. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, the weeds, bind them up in bundles and burn them. But gather the wheat into my barn. So what he is basically saying here is that if I take out the bad now, then some of the good will be destroyed. So it's better to let them grow side by side all the way to maturity. And when we harvest and we pull it all up, then it's a laborious type of work, but we will hand by hand separate the tares from the wheat. We'll bundle up the tares and we'll burn them. But the wheat that we've preserved, that we've kept, we'll then put them in our barn for good so that the enemy who thought he could destroy our field and destroy our wheat, he will not have accomplished what he set out to do. Now, Jesus is telling this parable to people who understood farming. That's what a parable is. It's basically a story. A parable is not necessarily to be read, it's to be heard. It's usually a story that everyone, when they hear it, they understand the process. They know what it was like sowing wheat, and they know about tares, and they've heard about this darnel stuff that could be sabotaged. All right, so they know what he is speaking, and they're thinking, what a lovely story. But the disciples who are hearing this, they know there's a meaning to this because every parable is a story about that daily life that had a spiritual meaning behind it. And so they know that they've heard a story that's of interest. They saw what happened in the story, but where is the spiritual analogy of it? What has happened from the Spirit? So then in verse 36, it says, "Then Jesus sent the multitude away and went into the house, and his disciples came unto him, saying, Declare unto us the parable of the tares of the field." Tell us, explain this one to us. We understand the process, but explain the spiritual part of this. "And he answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man," which he had always referred to himself. "The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels," the ones that will separate. Now, he is basically telling us, as we're studying the afterlife, is there an afterlife? Do we have evidence of an afterlife through the scriptures? Jesus is telling us through this parable that, yes, there's going to be an afterlife, and there's a reason why God allows the righteous and the wicked to grow together. Instead of taking out the wicked only, he is saying, I'm letting them grow together. And in the time of harvest, at the end of this age, at the end of this world, he will send out his angels, and his angels will know the difference between the wheat and the tares, the righteous and the wicked, and they will separate, and they will bundle the wicked together to banish them for eternal punishment, and then the righteous will be gathered to the quote unquote barn of the Father. Now, the one thing that the several things that we realize here is, not only is Jesus giving evidence of the afterlife, but he's also letting everyone know that God is to be the judge of this thing. That's the one thing that we have to realize at times, is that God is the judge. Throughout all these parables that we're going to talk about, God is the judge of our hearts. It's very important for us to remember that God judges the heart. He looks at the heart instead of the outside of the person. You know, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks upon the heart. So God is the ultimate judge on who is a wheat and who is a tare. And at the end of the age, he will make that determination and separate them. Now, not only does this give us an understanding of an afterlife, but it also is Jesus is referring to not only a barn as far as a heavenly place to be, but also there's eternal punishment for those who are bundled up, and, you know, as far as what he calls the tares here. If I can continue in verse 40, "And as therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be at the end of this world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear what is being said here." So not only is he telling us about the tares being burned, but this is, you know, he adds a description to this of the wailing and gnashing of teeth. This is the shepherd here. This is the meek Jesus that so many people rejected because he was too meek and all of this. But this is the meek Jesus saying that punishment is not just not being in the barn. There is a direct horror to this punishment. The wailing and gnashing of teeth is a description that he will continually use. He, Jesus, is the one who uses this description more than any others, talking about eternal damnation or in hell. And he's using that here in the parable of the wheat and the tares. Now, when you study this out, because the darnel plant or the weed and the wheat itself look so similar, there are some theologians who have studied this and said this is actually Jesus talking to the Jews, to the high priest, the religious people, and saying, you know, the wheat and the tares grow up together. They look identical on the outside. Some have even interpreted this as Jesus talking about, even in the church, that there are wheats and tares in the church. They look like Christians. They dress like Christians. All of these things, but only God knows the heart. And at the time of the harvest, those who have just been playing around and not really believing and not following, they could be listed as a tare. Now, Jesus doesn't break that into detail, but when he is talking to the crowds, the Jewish leaders are following him. And a lot of times he is making his points toward them, and some theologians are saying that. Nonetheless, whether he's talking about inside the church or just the wicked out there in the world versus the righteous in the world, we know one thing is that we're going to all grow up together. We're all going to live together until the end of the time, either the end of our personal lives or when God calls an end to this thing. And at that point, we will be separated. Now, in chapter 22 of Matthew, he is going to speak to them about another parable referring to a king who's going to have a marriage supper. You know, his son's going to have a marriage, and he's going to invite them to this party. And with this, he invites certain people. And that's the important part. He only invites certain people. I'm going to read a little bit out of the scriptures that don't have room to be in your quarterly. Let me get to where I want to be. And in your quarterly, starting with verse 1, it says, "And Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, and said, The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come." I've got to set the stage. In those biblical days, if you were of royalty and you were going to have a big feast, a big wedding, you sent two notices out. The first notice was to the people that you wanted to come to your feast, and you gave them plenty of notice, saying that there will be a marriage. I want you to be prepared. I'm not going to tell you when yet, but you just be prepared. You're invited. And then at the appointed time, when the fatted calf was ready to be slaughtered and everything was ready to be done, they would send their servants out to the second notice and said, "Everything is prepared. Everything is ready. Come and enjoy." And they were supposed to be prepared and to go. But in this case, he sent out the notices to people that he wanted to be at his feast. And when the second notice came out, said to them, "I'm now ready," they didn't come. All right. So verse 4 I want to pick up says, "And again, he sent forth other servants, say, tell them which are bidden." Tell the ones that we've already invited. "Behold, I have prepared my dinner. My ox and my fattings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage." But they made light of it and went their own way. One to his farm, another went to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them, threatened them spitefully, and even slew them. This is how much they didn't care about the king's message or his invitation. When he kept sending these servants, "Come, come, everything's ready," they slew them, they killed them. And this is in reference, here again, this is in reference to what Jesus is saying. He's referring this to the Jewish leaders, the religious leaders. This is coming right after Jesus has wept over Jerusalem. You remember when he said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I wish I could have brought you in like a hen brings her chicks in. But you have slain the prophets. You are the ones who God sent his prophets to tell you that the Messiah was coming, and you slew those prophets, and now the Messiah is here, and you've rejected me." Same thing of what he is saying with this parable. He's using this statement that even the servants that went out to remind these that were bidden to come, they killed them. They just killed the servants. "But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth," very angry, "and he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. Then saith the king to his servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were invited or bidden were not worthy." They're not worthy to come. "So go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid them to the marriage." Anybody that's wanting to come, bid them to come. I had a select group that I invited, and they didn't care. They rejected me. So I want you to go out and invite any a whosoever invitation. You get what the parable here is. Whosoever is willing to come, I want you to invite them. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came in to see the guest, he saw there a man had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, Friend, how camest thou in hither or in here not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness, where there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right. Now, this parable is referring to an afterlife. It is referring to punishment and reward. God has sent out the invitation. He first sent it out to the Jews, and they rejected his son. They rejected the supper that was designed for his son. And because they rejected, we know this from our biblical studies, that the Lord has opened up salvation to us Gentiles, to the world, to whosoever would believe. And because of that, we now have the availability and the invitation to come and be a part of this supper, to be a part of this marriage supper. We've been invited into it. And Jesus is saying, this is the kingdom of heaven. This is what it's like. This was the history of it, and here's where it's going. But in this, there's a person who does arrive. He was a whosoever. He's come, but he has not taken the respect or the care of wearing the wedding garment, or which is something that was a prerequisite. It's a, instead of the clothes of unrighteousness, we were to put on the clothes of righteousness. When we have become a believer of Jesus Christ and an acceptor of his gospel, and we are clothed, we're a new creature. The old man is gone, the new man has been created, and we put on clothes of righteousness, which is through his blood and his righteousness, not anything we've done. It's through him and our belief in him. This individual was invited, and he came in his own self. He didn't want to put on the new man. He didn't want to show that he was a changed individual. He still liked his old way and who he was. He was a self-centered individual and said, I'm invited. I'll show up on who I am. I don't need the clothing. I don't need the blood. I know I'm relying upon myself and my own righteousness. That's how I'm going to go to this. I am who I am, and I'll show you. And he stands out, and the king immediately eyewitnesses and says, Sir, or he says, Friend, why are you not wearing your garment? This is now the judgment seat. This man doesn't know it, but the judge, the king, is now rendering a judgment, and he's asking him, What sayest thou? Why are you here, but yet not wearing the clothes or the garment of the wedding? And he's speechless. He has nothing to say. And with that nothing being said, his heart is being revealed. Here again, God looks on the heart of the matter. Why is the man not there with his garment? Why is he not there with his clothes of righteousness that Christ has provided through the blood? He's speechless, and God, who looks upon the heart, knows his heart was not right. So even though he was there in amongst, there's a separation. Even at the party, at the marriage supper, there was a separation for those who had infiltrated in but was not wearing the garment, and he cast him out. And in this parable, here again, Jesus ends it by saying, bind him up and cast him out where there is gnashing of teeth. Gnashing of teeth is there for a purpose. It is certainly to make a distinction of where we don't want to be. You know, anywhere there's gnashing of teeth, I want no part of it. All right, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's at an amusement park. If there's a ride that says you're going to have weeping and gnashing of teeth, I'm not riding it. All right, I don't want any part of that. And that's what Jesus, I feel like, with these parables, he's trying to explain to people. This is no joke. This is not something to just laugh off and say, well, okay, so I'm not invited. I'm not going to eat at the party. No big deal. I'll go back. I showed you I'm my own man. I don't need your blood. I don't need your garments of righteousness. But no, the end result is not only being cast out, But there's a horrible punishment for that. And it's a punishment that was never designed for you to be a part of, but it is the result of you rejecting Jesus Christ. You rejected the invitation, being your own self. So with that, we get to the 25th chapter of Matthew. This is near the end of the book, near the end of the gospel. After the 25th, you're going to start seeing where he has the Last Supper, and he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane. They take him, they crucify him, he raises again. But chapter 25 is really his last teaching opportunity here. And out of the 24th chapter is all about the end times. This is when his disciples tell him, you know, they're leaving the Temple Mount in chapter 23, they're leaving the Temple Mount, and it's marvelous and incredible. They call it a wonder of the world when Herod redid the Temple Mount. And the disciples and Jesus were there, and they leave the synagogue, and they're marveling at it. And they say, oh, look at these stones. And this is where Jesus tells them, there's going to come a day when not one of these stones is going to stay on top of another. They're all going to be destroyed. Okay? And then they gather together in chapter 24, and they ask Jesus, tell us when these end times will be. What will be the sign of your second coming when you return? Because he's been telling them the Son of Man is going to go away. Tell us what to look for. They think it's going to happen in their lifetime. What shall we look for, and what's going to be taking place are the signs of your coming? And all of chapter 24 is Jesus explaining the times that they're going to be in. So when we get to chapter 25... he talks about he has two parables prior to this one that we're going to study. The first parable he gets in chapter 25 is the parable of the 10 virgins, where five kept enough oil for their lamps to be prepared when the man came back, and five didn't. They were foolish virgins. They didn't care enough to provide to keep enough oil. And then he gets into the parable of the talents, where a man, a master goes away, and he leaves three of his servants, and he leaves one five talents, one two talents, and one, and he says, make money while I'm gone. And he's talking about those, but then he gets into chapter 30 or verse 31, and he's not really talking about a parable as much as he is just explaining a result. This is the last thing he's talking about before he goes to the Last Supper episode. And it says this: when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. In verse 32, let me go there. They left that out. I wanted to pick it up. Where is it at? And before him, as he sits on his throne of glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats will be on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. This is your reward to the sheep that he has separated. 35. Here's the reason the sheep are welcomed into their reward. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. This is the parable. This is the statement that Jesus is making to those that were found to be sheep or the righteous. This is what they did to other people. This was how they showed their fruits. Now, the first thing we remind ourselves is that we are not saved by our works. Remember that. We cannot become good enough to be saved. That is a gift. That is called grace. That is a gift that is given to us that we cannot earn. We didn't earn it. We can't earn it now. That is God bestowing that through a gracious act of salvation that we can only receive. We only accept it. But as James tells us, once we've received that salvation, that gift, it changes, or it should change our hearts to where how we approach our fellow man, especially our fellow brethren, changes. And in this particular depiction, the ones that the sheep that are being separated to the right, Jesus is given an explanation as to why they are a sheep and not a goat. It's how they treated their fellow man, especially the ones that they saw and knew that was in need, and they did something to help when they could. There's an old story it was actually a priest who, this was just a story, but that said that he would, he was so, once he was reading the scriptures and he became so enthralled with helping his fellow man, at one point he was walking down the road and there was a man full of leprosy. And you know, the leprosy, you couldn't touch him. You couldn't get near him because it was highly contagious. And it was thought to be highly contagious. And so the priest went to this man who was an outcast. Nobody would get near him at all. And he wrapped his arms around this man, this leprous man, and hugged him to show his concern for him, to show that you may be an outcast of society, but I've received you. I accept you as a fellow human being, and I love you. And as the leprous man, as the embrace broke, the leprous man's face changed to the face of Christ. That's the story, all right? And that's, the story is there to affect how we, it's not saying that it happened, it's saying it's an analogy of what Christ is saying here, is that we are, our hearts are changed, and we are to look at those who are in need as though that we should be able to be the ones to help them. So, as he said, when did we do this? And he said, when did shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and thirsty and gave you drink? And when did we see thee a stranger? When did we do all this? Or when did we see thee sick or in prison? And the king said and answered unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you have done it to me. In other words, this shows them the righteous did not know or were not doing what they did for the reward. They did this out of their heart. They were asking, when Jesus separated the sheep and he says, for I was hungry and you fed me, I was naked and you clothed me. When did we do this? We didn't know it was you. And he was saying, when you've done it to the least of them, you've done it to me. But it lets us know what their heart was like. They weren't doing it for the glory. They weren't doing it for the reward. They were doing it out of their heart and their compassion for these people. And that's for something that we need to remember. Then, verse 41 says, then shall he also say unto them on the left, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire. Here again, giving this description of what, you know, this is, it's more than just being cast away. Everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Jesus is letting us know who hell was prepared for. For I was hungry and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you took me not in. I was naked and you clothed me not. Sick and you didn't visit me. Then shall they also answer him, saying, they're going to ask the same thing. Lord, when did you do this? Showing the difference of the heart. If we had known, if you'd have just said, I'm the Christ, then we would have done it. If you would have let us know who you were, then we would have clothed you, we'd have fed you, we'd have done everything we're supposed to do if you'd have only told us this is when you need to do it. It revealed their true meaning of their heart. And that's when he said, then shall he answer them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did not do it to the least of these, you didn't do it to the very ones who couldn't do anything in return. They couldn't help you back. You did not do it unto me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. The one thing that we gather, not only from these three parables that we've studied about, is that Jesus spoke of the afterlife very much. He wanted to be clear. When he spoke 10 times in the Gospel of Matthew about the kingdom of heaven, he wanted it to be clear that there is an afterlife. This life doesn't end right here. We live this life to get to the next one. And not only that, but there is going to be a separation point
for anyone that says, oh, everybody goes to heaven. You know, I don't know I've never been to a funeral where they said he just busted hell wide open. You know, when for those who believe that everybody, God is never going to separate, everyone's going to heaven, Jesus is laying out in these parables that all three that we talked about this morning, there is a separation point based on the heart of the individual involved. God looks on the heart, therefore we must take inventory of ourselves to make sure that we're not taking on the identity of the tare. We are the wheat. We are not supposed to be the tare. And we are the sheep and not the goat. And we've been given, we are the whosoever of the king who invited everyone that would come to the feast. We are part of the whosoever. But when we arrive, let's be clothed with Jesus' righteousness, not our own. With these three things, we learn about the afterlife to a point where once again we're reminded it counts. What we do on this earth counts. We're saved by his grace. But what we do while we're here is important. Next week, we're going to continue talking through the teachings of Jesus in the book of, well, we're going to go to all four Gospels next week, talking about the afterlife once again. So, once again, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers. Thanks for coming out this morning, and we